call to order the regular city meeting of the city and borough of Greenville, Alaska, on August 25th, 2015, at 7 p.m. This evening, the pledge of allegiance will be led by Assemblymember Judy Decker, after which the invitation is to be given by Nettie Kovall for the Presbyterian Church.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic which stands one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please join me in prayer. Gracious and heavenly Father, we ask that your wisdom and your love be in the hearts and on the tongues and in the minds of the people gathered here. As we gather in a safe place with the sun shining, help us to remember those, our neighbors in Sitka and other places in the Northwest that aren't so lucky. We ask that you bless this meeting to the betterment of this town and keep all safe as they return to their homes. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you.
We have a couple of ceremonial matters here to take care of. The first one is a certificate of service. The city and borough of Wrangell, Alaska presents a certificate of service to Cindy Waddington for her service of dedication as a member on the school board from October 2013 to August 2015. Cindy is not present. If you would pass this to the clerk, she can get that. And the second item is a proclamation. Proclamation on Childhood Cancer Awareness Month. Whereas the American Cancer Fund for Children and Kids Cancer Connection report cancer is the leading cause of death by disease among U.S. children between infancy and age 15. This tragic disease is detected in nearly 15,000 of our country's young people each and every year. Whereas one in five of our nation's children loses his or her battle with cancer. Many infants, children, and teens will suffer from long-term effects of comprehensive treatment, including secondary cancers. And whereas, founded over 20 years ago by Stephen Firestein, a member of the philanthropic Max Factor Cosmetics family, the American Cancer Fund for Children Incorporated and Kids Cancer Connection Incorporated are dedicated to helping these children and their families. And whereas the American Cancer Fund for Children and Kids Cancer Connection provide a variety of vital patient psychosocial services to children undergoing cancer treatment at Providence, Alaska Medical Center in Anchorage, as well as participating hospitals throughout the country, thereby enhancing the quality of life for these children and their families. And whereas the American Cancer Fund for Children and Kids Cancer Connection also sponsor Courageous Kid Recognition Award presentations, community give well cards, and hospital celebrations in honor of a child's determination and bravery to fight the battle against childhood cancer. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, David L. Jack, Mayor of the City and Borough of Wrangell, Alaska, do hereby proclaim the month of September 2015 as Childhood Cancer Awareness Month and encourage all community members of Wrangell to support children and their families who are living with childhood cancer. The next item is we have a presentation by Aaron Agerman. Tiz Peterman, I was supposed to have been here also, but I didn't.
Yeah, apologize on behalf of Tiz Peterman. She could not attend, but we work closely together in this transboundary issue, so I'll be able to speak on behalf of her and the WCA. We're taking this transboundary issue very seriously, and since the day I stepped into work over there, it's been at the top of my list of important things I'm doing every single week. Just a little bit, and I apologize for my notes on my phone, but a little backstory in case anyone doesn't know about, well, it's been 1 year and 3 weeks, and the Mount Pawley mine in British Columbia on the Fraser watershed, the tailings dam failed, and over 10,000 Olympic swimming pools worth of toxic mine tailings within 6 hours flooded the whole watershed, and to this day, 1 year plus later, communities below that mine have not had fish. They have not eaten fish, they have not harvested fish, some of them haven't had any water. The company, the parent company to that mine, Imperial Metals Corp., recently on the Iskut River, up in the headwaters of Stikine, opened a mine called the Red Chris Mine. It is built to almost identical specs to the mine in Mount Pawley, which failed after 17 years. Our mine, the Red Chris, will be a little bit larger, a little more toxic, as it was a copper and gold mine producing lead, mercury, items like that, with the tailings dam that's going to be holding well over 10 million gallons worth of toxins. Since I've been on board at the WCA, I have been installed as representative for United Tribal Transboundary Mining Work Group. It's a mouthful, but it's basically 13 tribes united, everyone in the southeast, to protect the three major watersheds, the Stikine, the Taku, and the Yunik, who all have transboundary issues facing them now or in the very near future. There's a thing that the International Joint Commission is supposed to be obeying, the Boundary Waters Treaty, which basically says don't pollute up above when we have to deal with it down below. And that hasn't been enforced in any of these permitting processes, and in fact the permitting process has been kind of not very transparent, and questions have been raised by many, and the part of the mining work group is not to, you know, stand up and throw yourselves in the train tracks or anything like that, but to encourage open permitting processes, safe mining practices, which are available. They're not cheap, but it's possible to not do what is really the danger, is actually the wet tailings, which is basically a giant lake with earthen dams on the sides that is constantly leaching toxins into the watershed. And then, given statistics in British Columbia, two of them fail every 10 years and have since 1969 when they started permitting these things. So it's not if they will fail, but when. And my job has been lately just to educate the community the best I can, to them to go home, to read, to watch YouTube. We go home and just watch Mount Pawley videos. It's scary, it's devastating. The Fraser watershed is nowhere near the Stikine watershed, which is very massive, but to think that a community of their size, tribes down there, to go that much without getting fish could be detrimental to not only just people looking for natural resources, for food, for subsistence, but for commercial fishing, for, you know, community businesses who rely on that money. So it's nothing that we can ignore. And recently, we were able to send some representatives of the mining work group down to British Columbia, along with Lieutenant Governor Byron Malott, who was sort of taking the driver's seat in the statewide fight against unsafe mining practices, and meet with some officials in Canada, to meet with members of the Canadian First Nations to show them what has happened down at Mount Pawley, how devastating it's been for that community. And Lieutenant Governor has also held meetings recently, which Tishpiam was able to attend. And they were in Juneau, and basically gathering all the tribes together to see what it is exactly that they want the state to do is step up to the plate. And this is going to be an ongoing thing for quite some time, but the Lieutenant Governor has made it one of his top priorities going forward, and he's very committed to it. So that's been very positive. They're also bringing Bill Bennett, who is the Canadian Minister of Mines and Energy, to Juneau tomorrow to Ketchikan Thursday. I hope I'll be able to attend that meeting to speak, to talk about the permitting process and how Alaska could be more involved in consultation or just being informed as to when these mines are being permitted, how, what they'll entail. Recently, within the last several weeks, we did hold the WCA at Blessing at Stikine, which I don't know if you saw it, basically a protest march through downtown to Shakes Island, where Blessing of the Waters took place. Speakers from the Iskut Nation in Tahltan, up at the headwaters here, along with a person from near Mount Polly, the Williams Lake tribe, was able to speak and talk about, yes, they not be able to get fish, and this is what could happen. So that was kind of an eye-opener to some, and I hope that we can keep continuing to do those sort of events to open more eyes, to get someone to go home and tell a couple people, and they go tell a couple people, just to know what's actually going on up there, because this isn't going to stop anytime soon. And the mine's multi-billion dollar industries, and Canada needs those. So not only do we need protected here, but it's going to be quite the fight, and we're choosing our battles, not to shut them down, but to see if they'll be more safe and to get us more involved. One thing that Lieutenant Governor has asked is that, well, I think his direct quote was, we need a groundswell of public outcry, not just from the tribes, but from the communities as well. I think that things are going to come up in the future where it would be good to have representation from the city attending, speaking, just being involved. Just even when you're not in this chamber, to go and talk to people and let them know this is what's happening. One great thing that I've heard, I came from a meeting with Central Council, Clinton Hyde is in town, including the president and all his officers, and they recently received funding to do baseline water testing on all three rivers, including the Stikine. This will be a three-year project. The first year is already funded, and within the next 12 months, they will do 12 tests on different areas of Stikine to test the water levels of toxicity, and they will continue to do so to see what effects the leaching may have. This one giving us a baseline to start from. That's going to start very soon. They haven't decided what order, what river is going to get to go first, but it's happening. Those will all be wrapped up by December of 2016, with two more years to follow after that. So that's something that's ongoing, and to show that Central Council, Lincoln Hyde, is beginning to put their resources on it, get involved. The new president's been very cooperative and set up a lot of the meetings with Lieutenant Governor, and generally interested in it, and he's been great to work with. I know a lot of you may have seen recently on the news the Animas River in Four Corners in Colorado. Bright orange, looks like someone threw a bunch of Cheetos in the water. It's Gatorade or something like that. That was a mine closed for decades and decades. The EPA was going in to clean it up and basically actually pulled the plug on 3 million gallons of toxins. They tested the water at some spots as 11,000 times the allotted amount of lead and 3,000 times the allotted amount of mercury. That's going to be nothing to what comes out of the Tailings Dam at the Red Chris. And just in sheer mass, a decade from now, there could be 3 to 4 times as much tailings, if not more, up there. And their initial runs of operation up there are showing really positive results on their end. So they're just going to keep ramping it up. And this is something that's going to come to a head at some point, if not my lifetime and someone else's. These tailings dams have to hold, like I said, over 10,000 or more Olympic-sized swimming pools worth of toxins forever. They don't go away. It's going to have to sit up there on our headwaters team forever. And everyone down here at the bottom should be aware of what could happen if it fails. And I just hope that when something comes up, I can come to the meetings again when more events happen. But to try to just get educated, get involved, and encourage others to do the same. Show your support, and we'll try to keep doing our portion. And if you get a chance to go home tonight and on your computer, articles, videos, anything else. Yeah, that's Mount Pauley. If you look at Mount Pauley, that's what is going to be operating up above us here. So, and that could affect everything and everybody. Any questions?
Go ahead.
Thanks, Aaron. I appreciate that. And I appreciate WSA taking this on and being active. We have passed a letter in the past voicing our concerns as well. So I think you can view us as similarly concerned and partnering with you guys. I mean, if there's things that you can see the city should be interacting, please come to us and let us know. I also wanted to ask, I'm not a mining expert or anything, but it seems that the tailings dam, the actual dam part, is the weak point or the most dangerous point. Is that your understanding as well?
Yeah, very much so. I think that there's a such thing as dry tailings, basically. A wet tailings dam, which is what Mount Pauley was and what they're putting in at the Red Chris, basically a big makeshift pond, picture the size of Virginia Lake, if not bigger, with basically sand, loose sand dammed up on the sides, and a slurry of all the toxic metals under, basically held under by water. And the dam sides are even built up with the toxins and everything else. And the dry tailings dam would basically take a pit and fill it up with these and close it back up. But much more expensive in the mining industry, so they tend to avoid that if all possible, just to maximize profits. And I think calls to put in dry tailings dams have been sort of shrugged off to this point. And so, but it happens places, so it is possible, but they're not planning to do that here. The parent company doesn't seem to be open to it.
Yeah, I was wondering, or even like a concrete dam versus earthen dam or something more. I mean, there's dams all over the world that don't bust, right? So.
Yeah, exactly. The Hoover Dam's going to be there for thousands of years. I mean, money put into that thing, but yeah, it's they put in these tailings dams saying hopefully they'll last, you know, 40 years and we'll keep reinforcing them, but that one lasted 17. So I mean, 17 years from now isn't a long time. My kid will be sitting around just graduating high school and that could happen. There was a dam or a facility near the Queen Charlotte Islands, the Banks Island Gold, it's called. They opened up in January. A month ago, they already got shut down for leaching because they were already ignoring certain requirements of how they were disposing of the tailings, and it was leaching into the water, and they already got shut down, and they'll probably never open back up again. But that was 5 months. So sometimes it'll take decades, sometimes it won't, but yeah, if the statistics have shown that since 1969, every decade, two tailings dams have been failing. And they're still making them with the same specs. Some of the mining laws they reference are from 1872. So that's not going to change. And as far as the tribe goes, our mission statement basically states that we're supporting the cultural, ceremonial, and subsistence lifestyle for not just our generation, but for future. So when something comes up in the tribe as big as this, and you hear about it, people are knocking on my door every single day, it's not going to go away. It's out in doing surveys and everything else. It's always number one of the priorities or concerns, so that's not going to stop anytime soon. And as all the tribes, it's one thing they've all noticed is that, as a, you know, we're sovereign nations and governments, but don't get treated as such. So we're hoping that working together, 13 of us in the Trans Mountain Mining Work Group, create a bigger voice, and statewide trying to do the same. It's going to take quite a bit, and we're going to be dedicated to it.
The tribe is working with the Tahltans too on this. How do they feel about this whole situation?
There's a new council, so it's hard to tell how the new council is. And speaking with representatives we had down here, they seem somewhat opposed. But when the community itself seems fairly split. A lot of people get good jobs out of it up there, so it's hard for some families to be totally opposed to it. But it did vote and pass their council during a previous council and to co-manage up there, and it had to for them to get going. So, a previous council up there did approve to co-manage this. So.
Any other questions or comments? Thank you, Aaron. We really appreciate your efforts in this. I think it's not just WCA problem, it is a community problem. And we really appreciate your spearheading the effort here.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I think I said before last time I was here, all of our WCA tribal members are regolites. And we all depend on the same, and it all basically starts with the river and the fish and filters down from there. So it affects everyone, every business, every family in some way or another. So. I hope that everyone gets educated and involved and spreads the word, and that's we'll try to figure out the calls to action as we go. But first thing is to let everyone in Wrangell know what's happening up there, because it could be bad. There's no easy way to put it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Roll call, please.
Assembly members Blake, Persanka, Rooney, Decker,
here.
Powell,
here.
Mitchell,
here.
And Mayor Jack.
Here. Amendments to the agenda. Are there any amendments? Yes.
On item 13G, which is to make a motion on the sewer pump project, we would like to remove that, but I would also like to talk on that subject. We had information that came in at 5 o'clock today that probably will change some of the actions we wanted to take. Keep it on the agenda, but just not to make the motion.
You want to just then change it to a discussion of the sewer pump project?
That would work, yes.
Okay. Conflict of interest. Does anyone have a conflict of interest on any agenda item? Item 5, consent agenda.
I move to approve those agenda items listed under consent agenda and those marked with an asterisk, which are items 6A, 7A, 7B, and 7C.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Yes.
I just wanted to say the Wrangell Medical Center board minutes were here, and I'm glad to see them, and I'd like to see that continue. It's a nice way to kind of keep the flow of communication going, so that was good.
Thank you. Been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Any further discussion? Roll vote, please.
Assembly members Powell?
Yes.
Mitchell?
Yes.
Decker?
Yes.
And Mayor Jack?
Yes. Item 8, Borough Manager's Report.
Just a couple items off the written report. The Byford's Junkyard, as written here, the failure in Colorado affected us too. They had money that they thought they could get to start the Byford cleanup. And all the EPA's money went to that project instead, but we are labeled for first in next year's monies. So Hopefully they can start that when they get a fresh amount of money there. So that's one item. Go ahead.
Can I have a question?
Sure.
On the Byford place, do we have signs like posted to just let community members that may, for some reason, wander over there? Because I didn't realize, I did a little looking about lead and stuff, and it's really, really, really not good.
And probably what we'll do, because EPA and DEC are kind of heading this for us, we'll ask them, we can ask them if there's something appropriate. They had one time that if they didn't have the money, they were actually going to fence it off, but now I don't think they have any money to do anything.
Yeah.
So we can ask them if there's something appropriate. They may have signs already made up that are appropriate for that, but we can ask that.
Good. Thank you.
Good question.
Evergreen Road, here about 4 months ago, we were told that they would do the public meetings with the folks out there about what they were going to need for land takes, easements and actual land takes. That has been moved till November, and it's a frustrating process, but unfortunately we have no control over it. And we've talked to the most current manager of the project, and he has said he would give us something every couple weeks so at least we know what's going on and we don't go long periods of time and find out there's something delayed. But so anyway, if that's the case and we start that in November and you start doing the math from there, the timeline, you know, it's going to be, they still think they can do it in 2016, but you've got it. It's probably going to take several months to do that if it goes well. If there's people that don't want to sign off on something, then they'll have to go through a legal process, an eminent domain process, and that can take a little time. And then after they get that, then they have to do the final design. They've got it pretty much designed, but there's still some things based on what happens in the land takes. So anyway, it's a slow process, but the road's falling apart. And
that was one of my questions, Jeff, is if you were going to go fill those potholes. If we're going to be a year out, there's some really bad holes in that road that probably ought to be filled, even if it's a temporary fill.
And the bad part is we just went out there and filled some within the last...
Well, we've done it twice in the last couple months. It's a continual process.
But you go out there and then a week later you'll have some more. And I don't know, it might be... And it's going to, as the weather gets worse, it's going to be happen more. It's going to be harder to do that kind of thing when the...
Are you putting any blacktop in it or just rock?
We're using coal patch.
I swear that one's a foot deep. I've drove in it twice.
And I don't know, maybe even signs at each end to caution, you know, something like that. So at least people that are driving there know to watch out. Because it is going to be hard. The whole road's just collapsing. And, you know, and the problem is, actually, Secon's in town, and you could do some big stretches, but you could spend, you know, $100,000 out there, and you wouldn't hardly notice it. And then we've got roads. We'll only have about 100 next year less now for a couple things we want to do, because all our road money that comes from sales tax is dedicated for that project. So, you know, and then if you hate to spend what you have for some other things, Third Street as an example, and then have them rip it up, and I mean, it's just a bad situation all the way around. I will continue to try to keep it together, and the holes get more than 4 feet deep, we'll put something in them. And maybe the signage could help, just to slow people down, say, hey, this is, you know, watch for the road is disintegrating, basically, and please be careful or something.
I say we allow four-wheelers.
I don't know. It seems like at a certain point, you get to the point where would be more cost-effective just to tear up the pavement than it would to keep trying to patch it. And that might be an option that's considered. It would certainly slow people down, too.
Yeah, and you'll get potholes with that also, but...
But they're not the sharp potholes.
Yeah, that's true.
But I'm not sure we have the equipment to chew that pavement up. So...
Well, I don't think it would take more than...
I can do it.
...than a front-end loader to tear up most stuff. You get a kid out there on his bicycle compared to right now.
But anyway, you're right, and it is a concern of ours, too, and we continue to get people calling us, and if you don't happen to be living on that road or drive on that road, you sometimes don't know. But like I said, I know we've gone out there multiple times to fix things, and two or three weeks later, you got just as many right back there. And
Have you guys talked with Senator Stedman or anyone like that, Representative Ortiz?
I talked to Representative Ortiz on this, but kind of updated him what was going on. And, but it's the same, and I think all of them, you know, mean well up front, but it's the same thing as Front Street. It started out, we were going to do them here. Mm-hmm. Bob Purnell and I went to Juneau and lobbied up there to get that into our hands so we could just hire a engineer, design it, and build it. The money was there. It's federal money, but this money, this federal highway money that comes through the state, they are not about to give it up, and they've got some kind of a deal with the federal highway system where they get the money that it has to be. There's not a federal highway office in the state of Alaska, so they require that DOT does this to make sure it's done to their standards and da-da-da-da-da. But the problem is, a lot of that standards is a slow-moving thing, and so I think oftentimes their staff, if they get pressure from, you know, Anchorage or Fairbanks or Juneau or one of the bigger communities, they'll shift. We just get this impression they shift personnel to that because that's where the influence is. Mm-hmm. And Wrangell kind of waits till they get done there and puts people back on it. And so it's like I said, sometimes actually Peggy Wilson a couple of years ago, and I called up there. She asked, you know, I thought it was going to be done in 2014, and I told her, no, they promised us they're designing in 2014, they'll go to bid in fall of 2014, construction 2015, well, here we are, and it's going to be tight to do it in 2016, so, but anyway, that's where we're at, kind of at their mercy, and, but we keep contact with them, and what's going on, and, you know, you kind of told us this, and, you know, trying to do everything we can to keep them on task, but, unfortunately, we don't sign their paychecks. So,
but you know, Senator Stedman and Randy Ruaro in his office is knows a lot of the state divisions and departments, and you know, even just making sure it's on their radar screen so that they every week call, hey, how's that Wrangell project going? Because right. They will.
Okay.
No, I would suggest.
And like I said, Representative Ortiz has called me about it, and I've kind of said what I've found or forwarded him emails that we've gotten, where the status is and what's going on, and told him our concerns as well. So, So that's the Evergreen Road. I think that was only two things. We did get Mike Allen finally squared away with all his stuff, and that was kind of a fiasco because mental health wanted to deal through us rather than him to go on their property, and so that took a little doing and had our attorney involved there, but he's all signed off and ready to go, so he can proceed. Anyway, that's about it.
Any other questions? Clerk's report.
Not much, other than what's in my report. Southeast Conference is coming up. And Assemblymember Decker will be attending that. As far as those who have declared their candidacy, we have Assemblymember Powell declared candidacy for Assembly. Port Commission, John Martin, we still have one seat open there. School Board, we have two seats open. Tamara Gershom filed. School Board, we have an unexpired term, and I have nobody who's filed for that. And Maxie Wiederspoon just filed for one of the hospital board seats. Hmm. So today. So we still have one assembly seat open. And so tell people, come in and see me. I have had quite a few people pick up packets. They just haven't brought them in. So, other than that, I don't have anything.
Any questions? Okay. Item 10, Mayor Assembly Reports and Appointments. Then you just didn't remember have any report. Yes.
I had a couple of things for folks in Wrangell that may or may not have heard. The heavy rain we had last week did cause a landslide in Sitka that wiped out a house and caused three deaths of Sitkins. And there's some folks raising money to help the families. They recovered two bodies, but they're still looking for the third. There's like a GoFundMe type website. I'm sure you could find it if you searched around. If I know there's a lot of people that have friends and family in Sitka and Wrangell, so.
They found the third.
Oh, they did?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Today.
Another thing that came to my attention and a couple weeks ago was that Shell Oil is looking to potentially move their vessel moorage operations. That they've been in Portland and Seattle area, and for various reasons, you know, partly because in Alaska they'd be closer to Arctic, but they're, you know, it sounds like they're actively scoping some Alaskan communities. Governor Murkowski, or former Governor Murkowski, had actually done a little editorial in the Alaska Dispatch News, and he specifically listed a few communities that are likely, such as Ketchikan, Wrangell, Kodiak, Seward, Dutch Harbor. And so after that, after we saw that editorial, I talked to Carol and Jeff, and Carol started putting together kind of a little packet of information about what Wrangell has to offer in the sense of facilities and services and land and things like that. And, you know, it's unclear exactly what they would need, you know, in a community to move some of their, you know, moorage of vessels and sort of their upkeep of the vessels in the off season. But it'd be nice to start that conversation. So I think Carol's making efforts to do that. And the last issue was Jeff sent an email to us about an update on the Tongass being exempt from the federal roadless rule and what's kind of happening there. And I'd like to see us put it on our agenda for our next meeting to discuss and potentially write a letter in support of the governor of Alaska basically petitioning the U.S. Supreme Court to look at that issue. So others have sent letters or resolutions to Governor Walker, Senators Murkowski, Sullivan, State Senator Egan, Stedman, Representative Munoz and Ortiz, and Ketchikan Gateway Borough. So I'd like us to consider that.
Anything further? Yeah.
Just one comment on Julie's on the Shell Oil. Frank Murkowski did give us some information that's where we kind of got it from originally. But and Carol's made several contact attempts with numbers and people that were on that. We haven't been successful, but she is putting together a letter. I think she might have got done today. And we'll talk to Frank to make sure we're getting it to where it needs to go. And of course, he has those contacts, so he can help us make it happen. So. But that's kind of where we're at.
Okay, thank you. We do have a vacancy on the Planning and Zoning Commission, and there have been no letters of interest received for that vacancy. So we will continue with that. The next item is persons to be heard. There are no persons to be heard. Item 12, unfinished business. Proposed ordinance number 905, a non-code ordinance of the city, of the Assembly of the City and Borough of Lincoln, Alaska, establishing due dates for the payment of 2015 property taxes as a transitional measure for implementation of ordinance number 901, which amended the property tax due dates in chapter 5.04 of the Lincoln Municipal Code. This is a second reading.
Move to adopt ordinance number 905.
Second.
Been moved and second. Any discussion? Yes?
Well, in the letters that were submitted to us, a couple of folks brought up the issue of October 15th as a date, and we kind of mentioned it in between here, but we should probably bring it up in this public session. Why? I don't remember us talking about that October 15th deadline. The people in town that were suggesting that was because they thought, you know, it'd make it life easier for folks who had received their permanent fund dividend to pay taxes. And so I was just, I guess, wanted to remind ourselves, did we have that conversation? Is there a reason not to use October 15th as the date in the future? Not this year, but in future years.
Yes.
I'm not sure if it came up. The only thing that we did when we did our research is most of the other communities that do that, have a one payment system, do it in September. And like I said, the other issue for us is the revenue getting it, you know, you start getting a quarter of the year where you haven't got any of your taxes yet. We're in a position that we're, you know, that's not a huge thing, but we may not always be that way. So I think that's the other thing, is getting it soon enough in the fiscal year to, you know, have funds to keep things open and run things. But so that's kind of the main thing. We really did talk a whole lot about the permanent fund, timing it with that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was more like, okay, these are other communities. We didn't want to be too far out of line with other things that were going on. We knew we needed to, you know, have funds sooner than later. And so that was, I guess, kind of the reasoning behind it.
Yep.
I understand that and all, but earlier we just had a little discussion about it, but we are receiving money, you know, in December, we would receive everything in October instead. I don't know, I would have to feel that. I remember this meeting, and Pam came here,
McCloskey,
and she was actually wanting to see that we do it in October because it would make it easier on some families and everything. And now after that meeting and talking to a lot of people and stuff, I could see where it would help a lot of people. And I unless we have another real good reason why not to do it, I don't see why we don't do an October 15th thing, other than who knows, the state of Alaska might say we're not going to have a dividend.
Hate to interrupt you, but that ordinance has already passed.
I understand that.
And it's, you know, unless we intend to readdress that ordinance, this type of discussion is probably not appropriate for this particular time. If you want to have it put back on the agenda for rediscussion, we can do that. But I don't see a real point, quite frankly, in getting into a discussion on an ordinance that's already passed. Do you want to readdress it in another meeting?
Yeah, I would propose to put this back on our agenda to discuss the payment time for 2016.
There's no objections, I'll put that on the agenda.
If you would, please. I think we're all pretty much in consensus. Which leaves us with the ordinance before us. That is the transitional date. Is there any further discussion on that, on the transition?
Well, just to say it on the record clearly, so this year and this year only, the payment dates will be by, first half by September 15th, second half by December 15th. And the ordinance we passed in the, we already passed for 2016, would change it so 100% would be due by September 15th. Okay. Or any time before.
Any further discussion? Call roll, please.
Assembly members Mitchell?
Yes.
Decker?
Yes.
Powell?
Yes.
And Mayor Jack?
Yes. That's all under unfinished business. Number item 13, new business 13A, proposed ordinance number 906. An ordinance of the Assembly of the City and Borough of Wrangell, Alaska, amending section 10.46.010, consumption of marijuana in a public place prohibited by the Wrangell Municipal Code, to revise the penalty provision to reference the minor offense fine schedule in Wrangell Municipal Code 1.20.050. This is a first reading.
Move to approve first reading of ordinance number 906 and move to a second with a public hearing to be held on September 8, 2015.
Second.
Been moved and second. Any discussion? Poll vote, please.
Assembly members Decker?
Yes.
Powell?
Yes.
Mitchell?
Yes.
And Mayor Jack?
Yes. Item 13B, proposed ordinance number 907. An ordinance of the Assembly of the City and Borough of Wrangell, Alaska, amending the minor offense fine schedule in Chapter 1.20, general penalty of the Wrangell Municipal Code. This is also first reading.
Move to approve first reading of ordinance number 907 and move to a second with a public hearing to be held on September 8, 2015.
Second.
Been moved and second. Any discussion?
Well,
yes.
I just want to say for clarification of people maybe listening, this basically takes the changes using marijuana in public from being like a, what's the term I'm looking for?
An infraction?
Yes, yes. So it's basically a fine instead of a criminal charge. So, and then we're putting it on the books as such, and the fee is, or the fine is a $100 fine for each offense.
One thing about this is too, if it's not on the fine schedule, if it's not on that schedule, then it would be a mandatory appearance. They would have to appear in court. They couldn't just mail in the mail. So that is the main reason for getting this on there. Any further discussion? Poll vote, please.
Assembly members Powell?
Yes.
Mitchell?
Yes.
Decker?
Yes.
And Mayor Jack?
Yes. Item 13C, proposed resolution number 08-15-1328. A resolution of the Assembly of the City and Borough of Wrangell, Alaska, amending the participation agreement with the Public Employees Retirement System, PERS, of Alaska by exempting Thomas Bay Power Authority employees and repealing ordinance of resolution number 09-14-1300.
Make a motion to adopt resolution number 08-15-1328, amending the participation agreement with Public Employee Retirement System.
Second.
Been moved and second. Any discussion? Yes.
You have something?
No, go ahead.
Just real quickly, we passed an ordinance last year shortly after Thomas Bay's final moments there. And doing exactly this, it evidently, two things happened. It went to PERS, and they didn't share it up there, so it went to one department, but it should have gone to somewhere else also to review it. And there was one small little wording issue they had with the resolution, so they've asked us to redo it, and they've approved the wording on this to make it like they wanted it, and so it's kind of a house cleaning thing at this point.
Yeah.
I'm just curious, I'm kind of confused, but Thomas Bay Power Authority is like kind of dissolved, so why do we have to exempt them from PERS?
In our participation agreement, it has to say who is in there, who participates and who doesn't. As an example, hospital employees don't, the borough manager doesn't, temporary employees don't. You have to actually label them in there. And because Thomas Bay, and what happens then if you add someone else, it also triggers the, remember there's all that discussion about the unfunded liability?
Mm-hmm.
This resolution, when we eliminated them, triggers that process that needs to happen so that the state will start to bill for that unfunded liability. There was already the study done, and that's what CEPA has agreed to pay.
Okay.
But without this resolution to them and them approving it, then that doesn't really trigger that, but it needs to.
Okay.
So I don't know if that makes sense or not, but that's
in bureaucratic ease, yeah.
That's what they've told us to do, so.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further discussion? Follow up, please.
Assembly members Mitchell?
Yes.
Decker?
Yes.
Howell?
Yes.
And Mayor Jack?
Yes. Item 13D, approval of a professional services contract for assessment services.
Move to approve a professional services contract for assessment services in Wrangell to Appraisal Company of Alaska, LLC for the 2016, 17, and 18 assessment years.
Been moved and second. Any discussion? Call the vote, please.
Assembly members Decker?
Yes.
Powell?
Yes.
Mitchell?
Yes.
And Mayor Jack?
Yes. Item 13E, approval of a bid award for the purchase of an ozone generator.
Move to approve a contract award to Ozone Water Systems, Inc. for the supply of one ozone generator in amount of $174,690, with funding to come from the Water Department's fiscal year 2016 fixed assets budget, and also to include a budget amendment in the amount of $24,690 from the Water Department's reserve fund to complete the funding needed for the procurement.
Second.
Been moved and second. Any discussion? Yes.
I just had one question. The second bid was like more than twice as much. I'm just curious as to why did such a huge difference.
I think the Primasone is a newer technology.
Mm.
Some of the other systems were well over the $300,000 mark as well, similar to what we have existing right now. But that company didn't participate in this bid, but they gave us a quote to replace it once they told us it was obsolete and they couldn't replace parts for us. And it was closer to, actually not twice as much, but closer to $400,000.
Okay.
Any other discussion? Call vote, please.
Assembly members Powell?
Yes.
Mitchell?
Yes.
Decker?
Yes.
And Mayor Jack?
Yes. Item 13F, approval of a bid award for the Cassiar Street Roadway and Utilities Improvements Phase 2 project.
I move to authorize the borough manager to enter into contract with BW Enterprises, LLC for the construction of the Cassiar Street Roadway and Utilities Improvements Phase 2 for the amount of $135,500, which includes the base bid amount and alternatives 1, 2, and 3 to be paid from DCCED and DEC grant funds, and $16,000 to come from the city sales street construction fund.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Yes?
Will this pay for my clarification, the base bid and all three alternatives? Okay. Because I was curious, because I think alternatives 1 and 2 are pretty important.
And we do that because, you know, we want to make sure a couple things are done, but oftentimes you don't know what the bids are going to come in. So if the base bid come in at 135, you know, maybe you could, maybe you wouldn't want to do that, some of the other things. But anyway, and the other tricky thing on this is the base bid, there's a complicated formula that how much the DEC grant is can only pay for certain things. Mm-hmm. So the base bid was all utilities. So that ups the percentage that DEC will pay mm-hmm. versus road work. And so we wanted to make sure we did the base bid, if nothing else, because that would give us the biggest advantage when it came to the grant allocation there. So, but we believe that it will use up both of the grants, and we'll take a little bit of our money.
Any further discussion? Hold on, please.
Assembly members Mitchell?
Yes.
Decker?
Yes.
Powell?
Yes.
And Mayor Jack?
Yes. Item 13G, discussion of sewer pump project approval. Yes.
This project started out several years ago where we needed our two pump stations, our main pump stations that pump all the sewage from in town here out to the sewer treatment plant. There's one located down by Ramey's, and the second one is located by the boat hall out near the power plant. The one at the power plant is the most critical, but we wanted to do both of them. So what happens oftentimes is we make a best guess of what this is going to cost. We did that, then we applied for a grant program to get the funding. They funded that, our estimate at 75%. We had to come up with the difference. And so at that point we went out to the normal process, an RFP process, hired an engineer, and they did the work. They come back this last, I don't know, February or March, sometime in there, instead of this project costing roughly $600,000, they said it's going to cost, with engineering and inspection and everything, roughly $1 million. So at that point, the granting agency, we told them that, you know, we don't have enough money to do both pumps, so we're just going to do one pump. So the granting agency told us, well, you can't do just one pump because it has to be a finished product and you apply for both stations. So they said, we think we can get you some more money and an extension of time because this will all take a little time. So that, you know, that sounded great for us. They're helping us do this, and sure enough, they got extra money. And so then at that point, we figured, well, we can get some extra time. So Carol found a place to get our matching portion for this extra money, which was a federal agency. And unfortunately, they take forever, so we're kind of moving along this path with them. Last Friday, they kind of gave us a verbal that we will get this other federal money, you know, so we're happy. So I sent an email to the granting people of the first grant, and they said, well, we've learned more information now, we can't give an extension. Well, the lead time on the pumps alone, they come from Sweden, and the lead time on those alone is, you know, 2 or 3 months, 2.5 to 3 months. And if you start doing the math, and then you got to be done by the end of December, you know, you can't do it. So initially we came here tonight. So two things happened. When they told us we couldn't have any more time, then they did come back and say, well, you can do one pump, and that would, as long as it was completed by then, it would be fine. And it's kind of like, why didn't you tell us both those things? Both things they told us then, they have reversed both things. But we kind of got led down this path, and now here we are. So now we're scrambling so we don't lose this money, because this pump station, especially the one by the power plant, has 35, 37-year-old technology in it. You can't get the pumps anymore. You know, you can't get parts to them. And it's, I mean, it could fail at any time. You're going to have a harbor full of sewage. So what we were looking at is, okay, instead of having a bid out like we normally do, a contractor, and he orders everything, let's do the things that have the crunch on the timeline at the same time. So we originally came here to ask to get permission to order the pumps, kind of a sole source in an emergency situation, which is allowed. And they basically told us, the grant people told us, that's fine if it's in your procurement, your home procurement code, Wrangell Municipal Code. And so that's kind of what we were going to ask tonight. Well, in the meantime, once I got the staff's turn us down for the extension, I appealed that to the commissioner's office. And so today at 5 o'clock, I got a call and said, we're going to work towards getting an extension and we're going to see if we can do it internally. And their problem is federal HUD money, and they've got a contract, it has to be spent by a certain time, da 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 da. So, but the commissioner wasn't available, but the deputy commissioner and someone else in their office said, we'll try to get back to you as soon as possible. This was late in the day, but they said, if we can't do it within our own regulations and rules, you know, there's some exception, then we'll petition HUD to give an extension. So if they do that, it, you know, if they can give us like 3 months, we can, I think we may still do the pumps just to make sure we have plenty of time for the contractor. And it's not a huge job. It shouldn't take them that long, but the delay and all these other things, getting it here is the problem. So hopefully tomorrow, the next day, we will find out for sure whether we can get the extension. But I'll tell you, we've looked at every option, and the risk is, if you say you did both pumps and the contractor costs you $800,000 to do, or $850,000 to do both pumps, and if you squeeze the contractor, his bid's going to be more because he's going to have, you know, buku overtime and all kind of other things, a lot of risk on his part also. But then if you have them both 95% done on December 31st, they won't pay for anything. So you can risk doing all this and get stuck holding the bag. Even with one pump, that could still happen. So we're hoping that this happens. The other thing we looked at is we've talked to USDA, the other funding partner, to scrap the one, do one pump, and they can give us like 45% of the funding in a grant. But we'd have to kind of reapply to them, and you'd lose the first grant monies. I'm not kidding, you got so complicated. I think we're all getting headaches in there just thinking of all the different things and the risk involved in every decision you can make. The other thing is that the state people, they've said that, I said, well, can we reapply next year for the money? And they said, well, Wrangell is now at 46% in the low and moderate income. You've got to be 51% to qualify. So we have to have more people that are in the lower to moderate to qualify for this grant program, so we couldn't apply for the grant in the future. I mean, it just went on and on and on, all these different scenarios. But the extension would solve pretty much everything. And so I think we'll just wait till we do that a couple more days, but we might end up having to have a special meeting or something to get this thing to try to get it done by December 31st. We'd only do one pump, and then we'd go back and look for more grant money for the second. Because, like I said, if that fails, and the, you know, that you're not going to get any money out of state, you're not going to get any money out of this program, so the wells of money are drying up, so we're a little panicky about that we can't find a source of money in the future if we don't try to make this happen. So it's a complicated thing. There's a lot of moving parts, and it seemed like throughout the day, Amber's been working, talking to contractors, do you think you can actually do it? And some of them are getting cold feet, that people that would do this kind of thing, and I don't know, that's not much time. And so the other thing, we could order these pumps now, get the pumps coming, and then nobody bid on it, and then you'd be stuck with two pumps. I mean, you'd use them eventually, but So anyway, everything we thought of, there was risk, there was potential city holding the bag on a big chunk of money, and so we're just, I think at this point, going to wait another day or two to see what the state can come up, and they sound like they were going to go to bat for us, so that's where we're at. It's just, like I said, I apologize we didn't have more, but it's since Friday when we got the bad news, we've been scrambling about how to make this work, so that's the sad story.
Yes.
You might put that on your list for Randy Roro in Senator Stedman's office. He's really good about that stuff, kind of stuff. So.
Is there further discussion on that? Item 14, attorney's file. There's some reports provided to the assembly. Item 15, executive session. We have item 16, adjournment. We'll adjourn at 8:06 p.m.